hitting record. Ticking over. I got telling you.
Stop toning.
Welcome in, everybody. We're recording on a Sunday night. You're listening to the
Analysis.
Matt and Bob here. We're here to pod, of course, about the movie The Holdovers, a throwback holiday comedy classic. A movie they don't make anymore, Bob. I'm excited to chat with you about it. I saw this a few weeks ago and texted you this movie is elite. Mm. I was overcome, maybe in the moment, the nostalgia of a nice dialogue-based prestige comedy drama from our boy Alexander Payne, he of the Sideways fame and Downsizing and The Descendants, a director who's made almost no movies I dislike. What did you think about it?
I would yes, and your elite tag that you've put on this movie, I would put it as one of my favorite movies this year. Oh. I agree with you in that it's...
Let's go.
It's a fantastic characters, the writing, I think even just kind of the entry placards and feel of the film is mm-hmm. is where I kind of wanted to start. And you know, these movies are very much me. Like, if you tell me you're going yeah. to get a kind of domestic drama with... talking about the importance of teaching and self-development and friendship and you're also going to bake in into that holiday pie a little bit of like abandonment issues and finding friends in lieu of kind of your family failing you. Like those are all very like Bob.
Checking a lot of Bob.
Bob boxes, baby. I love those types of movies. And so just when you get into a movie and you love the vibes of it, is where I wanted to start. Like they start and you like the way that the movie. This isn't shot on film, is it? It's just made to look like it was shot on film.
I assumed it was shot on film, but it certainly looks like it. I mean, it looks like it. So I listened to an interview with him, Alexander Payne, where he talks about, I put myself in the mindset of we were making this film in the 70s and what was at my disposal. So he wasn't trying to do any tricks or be overtly nostalgic. He was just like, the movie is set in the 70s. I want to make a contemporary film set in that time period.
And to give you the feel. And so that's where I'm talking about, where I'm like talking about like the vibes of the movie and when you're getting
grainy,
into it, those early
color palettes.
Of, this movie has been rated by the way that the R rating mm-hmm. comes about, or just the way that you get into the movie and the placards, and you just like it really grabs you from the first frame of the movie that you see, and it was sad to leave it. There was a little bit of watch checking that I had in Act Two that we'll get into, but overall I was like, this is a really just enjoyable hang. And
it's like if Dead Poets was re-released in theaters or something. Just like it feels like if Sideways had a prequel but was also a period piece, or sorry, a sequel, like his next teaching job, the next book he's trying to write, this kind of loser teacher guy who's just stuck in the same place. But then if you kind of combine it with like a School Ties vibe and and obviously Dead Poets, like this prep school sort of trope that I just think works super well.
And I also would say I don't want to smell my own farts here, but in the space of movies about educators, I run a training program, albeit it's a sales training program, but just the importance of learning, the importance of educators, and this kind of, to me, you were mentioning a lot of some of my favorite movies that involve the same themes. Another one is Mr. Holland's Opus that I think mm-hmm. plays here, because that also goes through, it has like some Vietnam elements to it. It kind of is like leading some of these kind of wayward young men and women he has in that movie, but also just the "Am I making a difference?" conversation that Paul, the character in The Holdovers, goes through, but also Mr. Holland. But just like, is what I'm doing relevant? Is what I'm doing important? And obviously, you get the payoff at the end of, okay, maybe I've made an impact on this one person's life. And I just, to me, all of that, and you also kind of add the holiday element of it, and the importance of people and the importance of an experience on the holidays. I was really floored by it. And again, to Yes and Your Elite, and I know I'm getting on the hyperbole train here, but this is my favorite Paul Giamatti ever. I'm going to say
he's great. He's so good in it.
Better than Sideways, even though Sideways is great and funny. It's a different type of movie. But this is my favorite. In just the way you kind of unpeel and you learn more about him, you feel like there's... This movie does a great job of kind of slowly letting you in on some of the questions that you form in the beginning of Act One. And it's mm-hmm. like, oh, okay, like his resentment and bitterness towards these students, like, where does that come from? Okay, like, why doesn't he leave the campus? Why does he kind of have this, like, admiration for this painting on the wall of this, like, old educator? And just a lot of the parts about him that are kind of mysteries come around later, and you're like, oh, it's a really cool character development and arc that he goes through.
No, it's a great arc, a slow-ish burn. We're like, what is this guy even doing here? He, like, hates everybody, and he has this terrible reputation, and he's just quoting, I mean, what, the antiquities? Greek, Roman battles.
Just pissed that no one's into the Roman Empire.
No, yeah.
I wish he lived in today.
Yeah, he's 50 years too early, man.
Everyone's talking about the Roman Empire these days. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, it's become like a meme TikTok trend where girlfriends are asking their boyfriends how often they think about the Roman Empire, and their answer is like, yeah, once or twice a week.
Yeah, like once or twice a week, like most days. Like, what? Yeah. I'm not one of those, but it says 14% of men between the ages of 18 to 45 think about the Roman Empire at least once a month.
That's so funny. I mean, I don't think I ever do outside of the bounds of like, oh, I kind of want to rewatch Gladiator because that movie rules, or quoting Gladiator. Outside of that, I'm not really, although I do quote the sea snakes bit quite a bit.
Okay. Yeah. I think that would technically count as thinking, I don't think about Gladiator or anything Roman Empire. So happily part of the other part.
It is a cautionary tale, you know, heavy is the head that wears the crown.
Okay.
You knew Marcus Aurelius. Mm. But yeah, what's funny about this movie is that like when I saw the trailer, I was like, that looks fine. You know, like I never really thought about it. And then, you know, I went to see it. I was like, oh my God, this might be like my favorite movie of the year. It's like a warm blanket of a film. It so takes you back to what used to be amazing about like movies, and just you'd get these all the time.
Yeah.
Like in the 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, just like the feeling of like Good Will Hunting. Every time I watch that, it just puts me in a better mood. I feel like this is like an instant classic.
And I think some of the Boston scenes are the best scenes. Yeah, you talk about the Good Will Hunting, kind of that the winter or the fall vibes. Like, you almost feel like you're in front of a fire watching it.
Dude, the East Coast in the fall and winter is just, like, great movie making. It's a great set, you know what I mean?
And I would say, and I quoted it, actually. I quoted this trailer, the movie The Holdovers trailer, when we were talking about Oppenheimer. And I was talking about how the history isn't just a study of the past, but it also informs our present. It lets us know where our present is. And I love that scene when they're in the museum, and he's like, look at this bowl. Like, it's like these two people like butt fucking each other.
And he's like,
you think like debauchery was invented in 1970? Like, no, pain, suffering, war, debauchery, like all these, all of the human spectrum is on display.
Everything's been done before.
Every generation feels like they've invented these things, but like, no, if you look at art and history, it's all been here the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
I just loved all those little profound little discoveries. And as the movie progresses, it's like the character development was just enriched. I love the fact that the Dominic Sessa, the kid playing opposite Paul Giamatti, this like legendary guy, is a first time actor. Like how
he's like a Broadway kid, right away.
Well, apparently he was at the school where they were casting and filming this thing, and then he just jumps in as like just one of the kids because I guess they were having trouble casting the role. And I'm sure he must have some sort of training.
Yeah, it's a really hard part for him to play too, because the spectrum of this character he has, Angus, is you kind of have to have the entitled brat part of it, because Paul Giamatti has to have something to play against and has to have something to put that venom into. And if he's just a sweet kid the whole time, then Paul Giamatti becomes an unsympathetic asshole. But like, right. Because he's kind of got that like douchiness to him, that level of douchiness, you're like, okay, I can see why Paul Giamatti is a little frustrated here, albeit he's also being an asshole.
But and then, like, unpredictable. Like, the kid did the best on the test, and then he's kind of dicking with him.
Yeah. So it's like the kind of the whole like potential and the genius of him is there. But then you also need him to be this sympathetic teen that's emotionally abandoned by his parents on the holiday, and then you get the emotional weight of like him desperately wanting to have a relationship with his father and like clinging onto all hope that his dad has all of his faculties. And I love that scene when he's kind of having that kind of young love or first love moment in the basement with the girl at the party, the niece at the
started
party.
Started to crank it a little bit.
A little bit. But he's like staring at that snow globe before that goes down, and you're like, he's just having this kind of mind-wandering, whimsical look into this snow globe. But like, no, he's like, what can I get my dad for the holidays if and when I'm able to pull this off and go see him? And that's the all those little details that Alexander Payne is able to kind of string together it just makes for a lot of nice ahas as you get into Act Three.
I felt the scene hard when he gets left by. So all the other kids that have to stay behind over the holidays are saved by the rich kid's dad who shows up in the helicopter. Like, if I was unable to go on that helicopter ride to go skiing at some chalet, I'd be so overcome with jealousy and fury.
One more time. Call him one more time.
just one more time.
Yeah. But yeah, you do feel for him in that. Or when he gets the picture back, when that fucking douchey kid steals his one picture of him and his dad and his mom when the family was all together, and he writes like fuckload or fuckwad or something on there, and it's just like what a mean thing to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I think he has to throw it away, right? He throws the photo
away. He just rips it up and dumps it, I think. But that's where him and Paul Giamatti, after they're finally forced to just be together, just the two of them, and spend more time those 2 weeks together. And you get all those, like, day one, day two, day 14, day 17 kind of placards that go on through the movie. But they start, like, Paul Giamatti starts to see himself in there. And, you know, he was a guy who was abandoned by parents. And he was a guy who was kind of abused by the world around him. And he starts to empathize with Angus. And he's not just this, like, douchey brat that's been beating him up his whole life, metaphorically.
Yeah, we meet kind of his personal tormentor. Not that like that guy was a bully, but like, you know,
he represents that experience.
Another guy that went to school with Paul Giamatti's character, and like, oh, I'm doing really well, how are you doing? And he's like, well, I wrote a book. When the kid covers from him, I love those moments too.
Yeah. Hey, I thought we were Barton men. That whole thing was a lie. What the fuck was that?
You know? Yeah, right.
But I get to control my story. He doesn't get my story, and he doesn't get to share it.
I like that.
And it shows you why he's so indebted to Barton, because he was out on his ass, and that allowed him to at least stay in the educational profession. I think this.
Yeah, remain some sort of sliver of respectability, being associated with, you know, a prestigious prep school. And, you know, the fact that he's contemplating writing this novel on
Paul Giamatti contemplating writing a novel. It's a gift that keeps on giving.
Just slot him in. That's, you know, one day fantasy. If you're casting, struggling writers movie, just get Paul Giamatti in there.
Yeah, is Paul available, or is he still on Billions season 19?
Yeah,
but yeah, I think that's I thought those were all really nice elements, and then of course you get the thing where he's tracking. Oh, you never leave the campus. Okay, well now once you get the end of the movie and you get the reveal of him and the sacrifice that he makes. Okay, well now I'm gonna go travel and I'm gonna go see these things and I'm gonna start writing and kind of unlock of his character arc towards the end there. But also,
I think
go ahead.
It was a funny wrinkle that he stinks.
Yeah.
He can't control his body odor because his body can't, control the production something, of some
can't control something,
fish oil smell.
So it just smells like fish the whole time. And then the eye, the wandering eye, it really, I spent like the first half of Act One trying to figure out, is he doing that with his eye? Does he have that much control over his instrument where he can flip an eye to the corner like that, or is that makeup? And I'm guessing
that's,
it's makeup.
That's no way. I mean, that has to be some sort of, I don't know, glass or a contact.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'd be so blown away if he's doing that. But it's the right one, but you got to look into the right one.
I thought that was such a nice moment. Honestly, I didn't cry during this movie, although I do welcome and allow myself to cry, whether I'm in the theater or at home, when stuff hits me emotionally. But that one was the one that kind of got me in my feels, it's this eye, that particular moment.
It felt like the oh, Captain, my Captain moment. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, you know, he's tail between his legs, he's taking one for the team, or he's throwing himself on the grenade so the student can have a better life. And then it just reminded me so much of Robin Williams. Got me going as well. I'm pretty sure I shed a few tears, but I was laughing, I'm crying. It was just like, it felt Christmassy. It's just, I just love that.
I love him telling off the shitty parents and then on his way out the door saying, "You are penis cancer in human form," to the like piece of shit, right. Fucking Dean. That, because he's like clearly punishing him. He's like the lowest person on the priority totem pole in that faculty, and they just shit on him and make him do the holdovers, and it's just like, you know what, they don't fucking deserve you, dude. You're the only one that like truly cares about educating these kids and not just signing a letter of recommendation to Princeton or Harvard or wherever these fuckers are going,
or taking the rich parents' money and making sure it keeps coming in, you know what I mean, like just so beholden to the parents of these kids even if they suck. And the fact that principal, whoever he was Paul Giamatti taught him. There's like another element to like how debasing it is to have to answer to a guy he probably failed, right?
Yeah, and now exactly.
Ascended above him.
Yeah, well, because he had an inside track and he had all of the levers that his parents could pull, and that all is baked into his resentment for the students that he's in fact teaching. It's like, no, none of you guys take this serious. You're all just here to get passed along, and eventually you're going to probably steal the good work off the backs of people who are less privileged than you when you get to college, because that was my experience.
Yeah.
Because he was plagiarized and then punished for it.
What I love is, like, I don't know if you caught this, but that cognac he steals and swigs, it's Louis the Eighth by Remy Martin. It costs $5,000.
Oh, shit. No.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much it was back then, but if you ever see it at a bar, I think a shot is like $500 plus dollars or something.
Yeah, I did not.
Super nice
that.
Stuff, and it's a nice bottle. So the people that make this bottle, because it's aged for so long, they never get to taste it. So, wow. Which I find amazing. So any given vintage, it takes like 90 years to, or something ridiculous to make, so.
Well, I'm glad that I have a sommelier like yourself, a man of fine taste, to let me know what the bottles were, because I just thought he had stolen some booze. But that's way more badass.
Incredibly expensive, rare cognac, brandy, French whiskey, basically, that's aged for about 100 years before they bottle it, so no one's able to taste what when they bring in the grapes, whoever's working for the company at that time is never able to taste
the
finished product.
So
pretty cool stuff, but just love this movie a lot. I can't wait to watch it again, pause at that scene where they're examining the Greek Roman artifacts, and maybe give it a few strokes.
Your hands are probably in your pants for most of the movies you see, regardless of if they're erotic or not.
No one's gonna get the South Park reference here, but I do like judging a movie based on if Randy Marsh could jerk off to a scene.
I can't jerk off to this. Hey, Matt, what'd you think of the movie? Oh, it was pretty good. I couldn't jerk off to any of it.
I mean, I thought he was going to get on with that kid with the girl in the basement briefly, but actually, I was kind of bummed that we didn't explore that. It was just like such a fleeting moment, but they had such great chemistry.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I hope that he like finds love in a hopeless place.
Get her number or something.
I want to know that there's a chance that they might meet up later, even though pretty heartbreaking moment where the secretary, who you feel it seems like she has a crush on Paul Giamatti the whole time, and then this gorgeous guy comes in and he's like, ah, fuck.
Yeah, we've all been there. That was honestly, like, there wasn't a ton of people in the theater that I saw it in, but there was like a little like gasp or a little like, when the guy came in and you kind of see him out of focus in the background and like, okay, a fucking guy.
Yeah.
And then Mary has that breakdown in the kitchen. It all kind of unravels pretty quickly for them at the party. But she was also fantastic as well. The cook.
Oh my God. Yeah. I was like, who would I know this woman from? And like, has she been in anything? She looks so familiar. And I can't think of what it is.
Do you know what I thought about when I saw this? Is Octavia Spencer has been cast in like down and out woman of color in the 60s in so many movies. I was like, normally that's Octavia Spencer all day.
I know.
She's amazing
God.
At it. Like she hits home runs every single time. Hidden Figures and The Help. And she was in, Guillermo del Toro movie? Shape of Water. Yeah, she was just like all these like, it's just like
that was the most down and out African American single whatever.
Yeah.
Well, did you also say the Numbers one?
Hidden Figures. Yeah. So anyway, those were, but that's I really enjoyed this performance, and I wouldn't be surprised if she starts to get some acclaim for it. And she had a really nice scene at the end, especially, and
yep.
I think that was a nice button on her character journey. But and of course, like her and Paul Giamatti, like they have a kinship. They have a kind of a special, not romantic relationship, but just kind of they're both these like outcasts in the school that are
right peas in a pod,
yeah,
sort of a thing.
Type of a deal. And I really like when that's kind of his first real redeemable moment, because he's kind of this old man asshole for the first 20 or 30 minutes of the movie. And then when he screams at that kid and he says, you have no fucking idea, like you have no idea what this person's been through. And I thought that was a really cool moment as well.
Defends her in the face of these brats, and it's, you know, there's a kinship there, and I think there's a lot of mutual respect. And you know, obviously she's known him for quite some time. She's probably been cooking there for a while. Divine Joy Randall, Divine Joy Randolph, excuse me. Only Murders in the Building is what I'm thinking of. She played the detective.
Oh, okay.
Throughout the series. So she's great. Yeah, I would have been bummed out if Octavia Spencer was in this, because I would immediately been like, ugh, here we go.
Yeah, same thing. She's hit home runs every time. But yeah, it was nice to, I thought that a character that's somewhat similar, but she had another fantastic performance in there.
You know what I was thinking of briefly when I was watching this is that this is the movie Spielberg wanted to do with the Fablemans, I bet. Like this sense of wonder and kind of old school movie making, and it just totally didn't work. But if you think about the beginning of the Fablemans, where it's like the Spielberg boy character watches Greatest Show on Earth, and he's just marveled at just like this little kid just staring up at the screen. That's kind of how I felt. For the first time in a long while, you know what I mean?
It doesn't all need to be spectacle, and we get so looped into, oh, that's a movie theater movie, quote unquote, or
yeah,
that's a watch at home movie. And I think a lot of people would label this a watch at home movie, and you don't really, I'm sure if I watched this on my TV, I would have a similar type of admiration for it. But I think it's just the more we keep doing those labels, the less and less these movies will even get produced, because they just get kind of lost in the shuffle. Yeah. And so I really like to try to go and like support some of the kind of simple dramas. And I enjoyed it. Reminded me of just an experience of going and watching some of those kind of classic dramas, like a Good Will Hunting, like me and you were talking about.
Yeah, well, the thing about Good Will Hunting, I've never seen it in the theaters, and it hasn't really, you know, obviously it's my favorite movie without having seen it in a full screen. And, you know, obviously there's still movies you can enjoy like that. But I think voting with your movie ticket is a worthwhile endeavor, you know, however It kind of feels like voting for the Green Party candidate, but at this point, but
hey, we're voting for Nader. Let's go. I think there's also we haven't touched on it yet, but there's always just kind of a through line over the top, and it affects every character in their own way of Vietnam, and that's something that is constantly in the background, because even Angus, he's worried that if he fails out of school, that's where the stakes are so high, because he's like, if I fail out of this school, this is my last school.
I'm going over there.
I'm
for
going
sure, yeah.
to not only am I going to military school, but likely going directly into the conflict. And then
that was a feeding tube to that conflict that was ever increasing. And I haven't done the math on when this takes place and at what point in the Vietnam War. But I assume they were kind of escalating.
Yeah,
or ramping up. So there is very likely that he goes straight in there, kind of like a Nebish some lieutenant, you know.
Yeah, and then obviously Mary Lamb, is her son was lost, and that also feeds into more of the narrative of Paul, the teacher, because he's seeing which kids aren't going away to the war, or these kids I continue to struggle with. You know, and so it's like, oh, this kid obviously is going to go and sacrifice his life. Meanwhile, the brats, it just reinforces his venom towards the brats.
Totally. Whereas, you know, the guy that had to go over there and serve, the African-American kid, was like all honors, you know, great student, hard worker. Yeah. And then he's got to go over there and die. And these fucking jackasses with the parents with the helicopters, they can kind of flunk out and they'll still be fine. And yeah, that sucks. It's, you know, you're witnessing it, imagine being basically almost a failure, and you have to watch these people coast through life and become the next CEOs of Goldman Sachs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's especially during the Vietnam War, where they're so privileged and the stakes are so high for everybody else that it's just gotta infuriate an educator in that time period.
Yeah, almost like Matthew Broderick in Election, where he watches these, like, fucking jerks go through. Remember Election? Anyway, just watching these jerks go through over and over and over again, and just has to sit there and keep teaching legislative, executive, judicial. And it's just, like, fucking finally snaps and goes nuts. And it's like, yeah, Paul Giamatti could have gone that way, but no, he finds the boy, he sees a lot of himself in him. And that little moment at the end, I guess that's my last thought, is... What a great little scene where he's like, "You've got this," and then Angus goes, "You too," like we're both at this kind of fork in the road, and we're kind of going down some uncharted waters here, but like we can do this, like we've got it in us.
Son of a bitch, stole my line.
What's that? Was that me? I stole it.
No, I was just drawing parallels between Will and
Very Will and Sean,
where they're helping each other figure out their own shit. You know what I mean? They're both encouraging the other person to put their chips on the table and play a hand.
Oh my god!
You know what I mean?
Now I know why I like this movie so much, because it ends pretty much the same as Good Will Hunting, which makes it my favorite movie. All right, cool. Nice discovery.
But love it, man. It's just Payne just does great with educators. I mean, Election, this, Sideways.
Yeah, he did Election too. Yeah.
I mean, that's an all timer. I've only watched it maybe once or twice.
Oh god, go back and watch it. Great movie.
Yeah,
this one's a lot lighter. The other one's so much darker. But
I'm so excited to see this again. I don't know when it will be out in streaming, but it's gonna be a great like over the holidays viewing.
I believe it's streaming right now, or at least I saw it on Amazon to rent. Probably one of those $20 rentals.
Oh, $20? Yeah. It's, I mean, however you see it, I just love this movie a lot. I think I may have texted you that this could be coming for Oppenheimer.
I would be very surprised, but I hope it gets recognized.
Coda. I mean, what if it's like the Coda?
Yeah, but Oppenheimer, if would that make Oppenheimer Power of the Dog, which that's not fair to Oppenheimer.
Yeah, no, not at all. Oppenheimer is on a much stronger platform, but this, you know what? Because of the voting body and how it's still skewing a little older, you know, it's very, it keys into nostalgia.
Okay.
I could see, you know, people just like, I really like The Holdovers. Like, it's going to be number two in a lot of ballads. Oppenheimer's going to be one or maybe not high up there. Okay. I think the preferential balloting, you could see it sneak one. But this is like, what, Green Book winning? I mean, although yeah. I love this movie way more than Green Book, but it's like an old school, you know, movie. It's just, we'll see.
Yeah. Either way, whether it wins one award or 20, or I think it won our hearts.
Yeah.
It won an analysis award, an anally.
It gets the anally, the anals.
The anals. Ah, God, you know what? I think I found a bit for us for January. Yeah.
The anals.
The anals. The analysis award.
There it is. All right. Well, this is currently holding. Oh, I did love Oppenheimer. I don't know if I would. I mean, that was such an incredible achievement. And then that's a movie you have to see 70mm IMAX if you can. It's just so amazing.
We're going to have all sorts of categories that aren't even close to those snooty Oscar shit. We'll
for sure.
Give me a few days. We'll come up with some fun.
All right. Sweet. Yeah. Cool. Best use of freight in a film.
Oh, yes, yeah. Best jerk-off scene.
I can jerk off to this. It's a Brazilian fart fetish porn I watched recently. Check it out. All right, cool. I love it. We'll get ready for the anals later, guys. The 95th annual running of the Analysis Awards. All right, cool. Well, yeah, glad you checked it out, man. I wasn't sure if you were gonna make it to this one, but
hey, man, if I get a "this movie is elite" text from Hayes, I'm getting in line.
Yeah, good to hear. Yeah, I'm so excited to see it again. It's such a movie for me and you. Yeah, I mean, it's very, as we discussed, it's very Good Will Hunting esque, and that just hits me in the sweet spot. That exact movie, two powerhouse performances, a lot of great supporting actors, sweet, kind-hearted, funny. It has everything. I don't know. Love it.
I agree. So with that said, thank you guys. Feel free to go out, give it a stream, or vote with your ticket. And while you're doing that, make sure you smash the subscribe button. Give us a little review if you enjoyed what you heard. And we will see you down the road. Bye. Happy holiday.
Here we go. So get your best.